Blog Talk Radio.
As much time as you need. Hello, everyone. I'm the moderator here on New School Homeschool, and Mary Duffy and Sandy Staling from the East Coast and the Midwest of the United States are going to be hosting the show tonight on Wonderful Worldwide Educators. We support the all-natural environment that supports all of us. Go ahead and take it away, Miss Mary.
Thanks, Kelsey. Hi, everyone. Mary here. Thanks for joining us on our first episode of New Homeschool Live Block Talk Radio Show. I'm your host here along with Sandy Staling, president of the New Homeschool course, written and produced by our very special friend, Duane Hefner. I would like to introduce Dara Berger. She's the author of the book, How to Prevent Autism. She is also a documentary filmmaker who is currently working on a film about how to prevent chronic illness in children. Dara served as a board member and co-chair of the program committee for the National Autism Association New York Metro Chapter for 6 years. She began her career as a news reporter, producer for a local nightly news program, and subsequently founded her own documentary film produced company, Say It Out Loud Productions Incorporated, to produce films on meaningful issues. She has recently completed the Institute for Integrative Nutrition's Health Coach Certificate Program, which she hopes to use to help other families prevent chronic illness and autism in their children. I would love to introduce a very strong, empowered mother, Dara Berger. Welcome, Dara. It's our pleasure to have you live with us today. Did you want to start off telling us about yourself and how you came to even write about a book for autism prevention?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me come today. So basically, I was drawn to this subject, to writing this book. I think something led me on this path for many, many years. And my son was diagnosed with autism 12 years ago. He's now 14. He was just about 2 years old. And it's been an incredible journey, not a journey I would have, you know, liked to ask for to be on, but you know, we've made the best of it. It's been an incredible experience, and we've met amazing people along the way, as you can imagine. Basically, my son was catapulted into autism following a vaccine injury at 18 months. He had suffered two ischemic strokes from a vaccine. I had been doing a very alternative schedule, and unfortunately, even doing them very slowly and spaced apart, it didn't protect him from the dangers of vaccines. And he immediately lost his speech overnight, and he unraveled his fine motor skills. He lost the ability to walk upstairs. He couldn't look me in the eye. I mean, all the telltale signs of autism, because the word autism doesn't really mean a lot to parents who have a child with autism. It's just a collection of symptoms, but it doesn't really it doesn't say that much. It's kind of like saying you have cancer, but not saying what organ is affected and how bad it is. So I immediately went on a healing journey. I knew that he wasn't born this way, and I knew that I had to find a way to get his health back. And so I immediately jumped into holistic alternative medicine, you know, in healing him naturally, because he doesn't do well with anything pharmaceutical, hence the vaccines as well. And it's been an incredible journey, and I have recovered his speech. I prevented it in my daughter, and it was through all the years working hard to prevent it in my daughter and healing my son that inspired me to write this book about our journey.
I find it super interesting, just like you and other mothers. We feel like we have to vaccinate, and that's the best for our kids, and then as we educate ourselves, we're, you know, we don't want to harm our kids, so we're always looking for the best way. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about having these vaccines be spread apart because maybe that would help. But in the end, it's really all poison. And even though you did so, you still had a huge awakening that it doesn't matter how far apart they are. I mean, the poison is poison in your child's body. And from that, did you not vaccinate your daughter at all?
Well, I don't like to publicly talk about, you know, her medical records and her health. Mm-hmm. Let's just say we did things very differently with her, drastically different.
And she seems to have no signs of...
She has, unlike most children surrounding her, she has no chronic illness. She doesn't have any kind of ongoing issues that all the children have these days. I mean, you know the numbers that 54% of children have at least one or more chronic illnesses. And I was able to prevent autism in her. There were some concerns early on. She developed eczema, food allergies, you know, all these soft signs that we see with children with autism. I mean, honestly, my son had nothing wrong with him until I started vaccinating him. I gave him his first vaccine at about 6 months, and all of a sudden we had eczema, we had a yeast rash that was relentless and wouldn't go away, we had food allergies. I mean, my son was spitting up large chunks of formula, which I now know is an overt sign of food allergy, and he had red ears and cheeks. And the doctor just kept telling me to put Aquaphor on his cheeks like night and day, which, of course, did nothing.
Yeah.
So it's very scary how little Western medicine pediatricians know about real health. I mean, they're all about suppressing a symptom when you go to visit them. And, you know, I think it's impossible that these doctors don't know what's going on. Because if you think about how many, I can't go on Facebook for 5 minutes without seeing some child that died of SIDS at 2 or 4 months right after their vaccines. So it's impossible that the doctors don't know what's going on. They've got so many sick kids, and anybody who's been in practice 10 or 15 years, they know what's going on. You know, the kids are coming back right after vaccines. There's a hospital visit for seizures. There's, you know, reflux right after their 2 month shots. I mean, they know the projectile vomiting. They know what's going on. And that's what I find incredibly sad here.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate that it really seems, and this is why it's so important to have you here today. I mean, you're just one of the mothers that have had to go through such tragedy to realize, you know, they have to be more informed, and you have to do more of your own research and more of your own education and really be an advocate for your children. Did you want to share some of the methods that you use for your son and some of the benefits of those for him specifically?
Sure, and I do want to mention that I had my own vaccine injury. I had a little cut above my eye that I got hit by a dryer door opening, and I had a tetanus shot, and I immediately went into full-blown multiple chemical sensitivities within a week. And that's probably why I was nervous with my son and doing an alternative schedule. I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I must have equated my illness, the onset of my illness, so drastic. I mean, I was so sick that I used to have to smell a book to see if the ink bothered me before I could purchase it. I was like itchy in the sun. I couldn't be in the sun any longer. It was so my son didn't gestate in the most healthy environment. And I just want to say, I think a lot of women don't know that when you can't get pregnant, and I had to do IVF with my son, and you're sick with a chronic illness, that affects the baby. That is going to affect their immune system. But what I will tell you helped my son was diet is imperative. I will speak from my own experience. I went on every diet and every treatment I did to myself that I did to my son, because I was trying to clean out before I had another baby. I wasn't actually sure I was ever going to have one because I was scared to death. Most of us know that, you know, once you have a child with autism, you have a very increased chance of it happening again. So we did the specific carbohydrate diet, and within 6 weeks, my allergies were gone. I no longer had this autoimmune illness. And I think you guys probably know about that diet. It is a very healing diet. You basically only eat fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and meat. You know, all the processed food is gone. You don't eat out at restaurants, and it's a very healing diet. So that diet definitely helped my son a lot. But the thing that gave him back his speech was helminthic therapy. Do you know what that is?
I don't. Would you like to explain?
Sure. It is basically based on the theory that we are too clean, the hygiene hypothesis, that we are not exposed to germs anymore, because germs are good and bad for us. Even the bad ones, they stimulate our immune system. So when you're using Purell every second on your baby and you're not letting them go on the ground outside, of course, somewhere where it's safe and there's no pesticides, you know, you're not allowing them to have their microbiome be exposed to the good and the bad bacteria and the viruses and everything. So basically what this therapy is, and just so you know, it's been in stage 2 or 3 clinical trials. They gave this, it's a parasite therapy. It's the idea that we're too clean, and they give you parasites that are meant for another animal. They're not meant for humans. And so after 2 days, they leave your body. You just drink them. It's like a saline solution. And they latch on to your intestines, but after 2 days, they realize you're not the right species, and they just leave you. But they leave behind these enzymes that stimulate the immune system, and they, like, shut off the inflammation, because inflammation in the gut and the brain is, like, one of the biggest hazards with autism. And a lot of functional medicine doctors think it's the reason that, you know, these kids have so many problems and they can't speak, the apraxia. Is from the they believe it's from the brain inflammation, of course, toxins and a host of other things. But inflammation is a big thing. And so my son, within a week, he was apraxic for 7 years. He couldn't say a word. The most seasoned speech pathologist said he would never speak, they told me. But I never gave up. I said, he wasn't born this way. I'm going to get his speech back. And so we slowly but surely, he started to speak. And he's been speaking now since he's 8 and a half, and his speech just continues to get better and better. And, you know, I mean, I forget the fact that he couldn't even speak. I don't even think about it. Yeah. And we did a host of other things, IV vitamin C's, B12 shots, all kinds of supplements, Lee Cowden protocol, a lot of herbal protocols that detox you. So we've done and so many different diets. But they work. These things really work.
Yeah.
And I wish I could say there's...
Go ahead.
I wish I could say there was one antidote to reverse autism, but we know that every child gets to autism or some other chronic illness in their own individual way, with their own genetic predispositions and the toxins that affected their immune system. But it's the same thing. They all recover in a different way because they're all so different. So what worked for my son, I've had friends who have tried and it doesn't work for them. And then I have friends who something else recovered their child and I've tried it and it hasn't done anything. And that's what's so incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it's really important to point out that even though, you know, some children don't have side effects or an extreme side effect like autism from vaccines, even without the vaccines, we have to be really mindful of what we're feeding our children and what diet they're intaking, because over a course of time, if we keep feeding ourselves any type of poison, we're bound to be sick. And with that, I was curious the history of maybe your vaccines when you were a child, and if your parents had ever talked about any influence it had on you, or maybe any issues you had when you were young?
You know, when I was younger, I do recall that I went to some kind of play therapy when I was around kindergarten age. My parents didn't elaborate what it was, but I definitely had some kind of play therapy, which we now look at as like ABA or you know, Greenspan or something. So I obviously must have had issues, and it's very interesting. The first line in my book, it stands alone. It's one sentence that says, if I were born today, I truly believe that I would have autism. And I believe that in every cell in my body that I had. When we went to our first functional medicine doctor, she described all the problems with Dylan, heavy metal toxicity, candida. And I looked at her and I was like, and she described all the symptoms about having sound issues, being bothered with by sensory issues. And I looked at her and she was describing me. And I asked her if I could see her, you know, and she, they had just opened an adult division. But, you know, I'm very sensitive, just like Dylan is. We walk down the street. Dylan puts his hands over his ears to certain sounds. He's very bothered, and I'm very sound sensitive. If it were appropriate, I would love to put my hands over my ears at certain times during the day, but I, it would look kind of funny walking down the street. But it is interesting, you know, how it's true. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Dylan and I are very simple. Similar, and a lot of the times when I'm doing a new treatment on Dylan, I will try it myself first because I know that we're going to react the same.
Yeah, it's important to educate ourselves outside of the medical field. It seems that, you know, they don't, most don't even want to consider that vaccines are an issue, and there's many parents being dismissed from practices because, you know, they're very worried, and some parents are even coming in and they're educating their doctors and they just, they're not liking it. And in your book, you actually interview many doctors who you've received confirmation from and information to help assist other families. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. I interviewed some wonderful medical professionals, and I purposely chose people in different fields of medicine, nurse, nutritionist, physician's assistant, a few doctors, a couple scientists, just to show that this is the way of looking at health, you know, when it comes to functional medicine. A lot of these people just started out as Western medical practitioners, and their eyes got open to what they were seeing going on around them. So a lot of these people are in the trenches every day trying to help these children get better, whether it's someone with a severe peanut allergy, severe seizures, autism, because the children have never been sicker. It's a very sad state that our children's health is in, and it seems that the masses of people are willing to just look the other way. They think their child has a peanut allergy, but they have an EpiPen, so they're going to be okay, or their child has an inhaler for their asthma, and until your child is completely debilitated, like with autism, I guess sometimes you're not forced to really look at what's going on and radically change your life. I've been forced to, and now I appreciate the good health I have. I appreciate my daughter's good health. And one thing that's important I tell people in my book, it's so important to maintain it. Once you have good health, don't start buying Chips Ahoy cookies and Kraft macaroni and cheese and going to McDonald's. I mean, that is just junky food that's going to erode your good health. I understand everybody needs to eat once in a while. Not even food. I call it fake food. Fast food is fake food to me. So, yeah, these medical professionals are amazing. The insights they show, they have my deepest respect. And the parents that are like me in the trenches every day, whether they're dealing with pandas, food allergies, you know, trying to recover their children, I mean, they're the true heroes here, you know? They're the true heroes.
Yes. Yes, speaking up, you also have a Say It Out Loud production. Are you still using that site, Say It Out Loud Productions?
Yeah, I did a trailer to do a, because I would love to do a documentary film, because not everybody wants to read a book, you know. They like to sit down and just spend an hour and watch a show and learn from it. So my goal is to do a documentary film and expand it to children's health, not just autism, because we know children are affected. We have epidemics of diabetes, of asthma, of pediatric cancer. I mean, the children are just so sick. But I am also writing a children's book right now with my daughter, and it's very empowering for her. She's 8 years old, and she is just going to, we're going to talk about, you know, why is it important to eat organic food? What is wrong with these chemicals and preservatives in our food? Teach people about why glass is so much safer than plastic. Just all the things that, you know, you and I have come to know and learn, but really trying to teach the youngest, you know, next generation, those 3 to 8 years old, right now what genetically modified food is and why it's not good for us. And so, and all the people who do the illustrations are going to be young adults and children in their teens who have autism or some other disability.
Yeah, it's really important. Children are the future. It's important to give them real guidance and real education. Even in school, you know, they're being indoctrinated with certain systems. And just like there's a very small percentage of doctors and nurses who really see what's going on and are really putting their necks on the line to do the right thing for children. And it just hopefully continues to grow with people like yourself and with us with the new homeschool. And we can all team up together and really provide a really good service for children. Real education.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say it's just the vaccines. It would be so simple if all I need to do is stay away from a vaccine. And I think they're incredibly dangerous. And they offer us nothing good. They erode our health, if anything. And I wish parents today didn't feel so pressured. You know, they fear they're going to get kicked out of their doctor's office. They fear that they're not going to be able to, a child's not going to be able to go to school and camp, not be able to have friends because of their parents will find out and not want them around their children. It's just really sad what is going on right now. But again, I wish it were just vaccines because I, you know, we have Wi-Fi coming at us from everywhere with the threat of this new 5G, which is going to go right through every cell in our body. And then we've got genetically modified, I mean, basically all the food that you eat at a restaurant or anywhere else, you should just assume it's genetically modified if it's not organic. And
yeah.
You have pesticides, right, we have pesticides everywhere. You know, it's so hard to stay away from, like I live in New York City near Central Park. My children know they are not allowed to sit on the grass. New York City sprays more glyphosate than like the state of California. It's insane what's going on. So you really have to be so vigilant. You know, it's easy to keep your home safe by the right products and furniture that's not going to outgas terrible chemicals, and you could feed your family good food, but people don't realize you need to constantly think about detoxing on a daily basis just because you're around the chemtrails outside, the glyphosate that's sprayed everywhere. It's unfortunately very scary times, but the good thing is people should know there's so much you can do to undo the daily, you know, amount of toxins that are coming at you. There are things you can do, and you just need to be vigilant.
Yeah, and we need to share. I mean, just that alone, that you're so aware and sharing that with others who aren't recognizing, you know, any of it. You know, you don't have to have Wi-Fi in your home. You can have the Ethernet cords is one way. There's shielding. There's grounding techniques. And just bringing
awareness.
And if you
have to have the Wi-Fi, turn it off at night while you sleep, at least, at a minimum.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
At a minimum. I mean, because a lot of people tell me, oh, I can't wire my apartment, whatever. Okay, just turn it off. When you're done with it at 9 o'clock at night or whatever, just turn it off.
I get sometimes maybe upset for many others. It's a pleasure speaking with you and having the same understanding and realization of what's going on here. But I find so many times that with my friends and families and other mothers and even my own family, that they really don't see what's going on here, and I tend to be maybe the crazy person, or you know, I'm kind of left off, and it's, you know, like I'm just making these things up. How have you felt throughout your process? It's really hard to stand, you know, real and be against the masses. Have you had a lot of backlash? You know, what's your experience with sharing what
you know?
I think I
feel compelled to share for the reasons that you probably do, which is I find that when most of the time I'm speaking to people and I'm giving that kind of information, it just comes out in everyday conversation, they're thankful. People's ears perk up because most people inherently want to feel good. They want to feel like they're doing the right things that are healthy. So I find that people will keep asking more questions. And, yes, of course you have those people when it comes to that, you know, conversation about vaccines that can just really be horrible to speak to. But for the most part, I think people are waking up. I mean, who would have ever thought Whole Foods and those type of health food stores would be on every corner, I mean, when they first came out? So people really do care. They're perking up. People are very sick. I mean, cancer affects, like, I forget if it's 1 in 2 for men and then 1 in 3 for women or reversed. I mean, we really have epidemics of every chronic illness across the board. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't have something going on, whether it's MS, arthritis, just irritable bowel syndrome, something. So I think people are more, you know, they're really taking the information in more. As far as it came to my book, there was a lot of backlash. I had the neurodiversity group really attack me. They accused me of eugenics, that I was saying that these people shouldn't be born. And we all know we're not saying that anybody shouldn't be born. It's that if we can prevent someone suffering, and autism, to have autism, most of these kids are really suffering. Yes, maybe some of the very high-functioning ones, maybe they're, you know, a little bit less affected, but these children cannot feed themselves. They cannot speak. They cannot go to the bathroom on their own. Some of these children cannot even attend school because their behaviors are so debilitating. So we are not just talking about some quirky kid who's a little socially off. I mean, we have an epidemic of children that cannot even hold jobs that, you know, are mundane, repetitive tasks. They a lot of them need health, what do they call, job coaches. So it's really scary times what's going on now.
Yeah, and if we continue as a whole to keep agreeing to everything that's going on here, we're just going to, you know, more kids are going to be silenced. And kids are the future. Kids know what they need. They know what they want. And we really have to listen and step up and protect them and really be advocates and educate ourselves outside of the medical field, educate ourselves outside of the nutritionist, and really trust in a mother's tuition. It's there, and we know.
And what's so sad is, we know it all comes down to money. The companies that have the products that are the most damaging to us, which is the Wi-Fi, the telecommunications company, the Monsanto Bear, you know, and thank God that's all changing with them, with that lawsuit that came out in California where they're forced to pay all that money. But with the genetically modified foods, just all these companies are making money at eroding our good health. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of what's going on in Florida, that, you know, the politician Rick Scott was, like, letting Big Sugar walk all over the Everglades and do things that weren't, you know, environmentally sound and correct decisions. And now Florida's paying for it. I mean, they have every sea life is washing up on people's shores. So it's really sad that this all comes down to money. That's what is most sad to me of all, is that we're letting these companies just like a runaway train. We're letting them control our government because they spend so much money and lobbyists every year. So that's what's so scary here. But I do believe if we all speak out, we keep sharing information, we keep educating new people, and, you know, we have to make our voices heard, especially when it comes time to voting for these people and not vote them back into office. Richard Pan, Rick Scott of Florida, you know, it's very important.
I agree. I think we have some callers here that may have some questions for you.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so okay. I have a question.
Okay, there you go.
My children were in, I started them in kindergarten 45 years ago. I know it's a long time. When I signed them up, I was given a sheet of paper, and I had to take that to my doctor. And before they could enter school, they had to have all their vaccines in place. And of course, my mother-in-law was a pediatric nurse, so if I didn't march them down, she would have. Is that still happening today? Do they have to have them to enter school?
Well, they don't have to have the shots. Most states still have a religious exemption. There are very few. I think there's only three states that don't. Everybody has a medical exemption from what I know. Medical exemptions are a lot tougher than a religious exemption. So it's important to look up your state. And if there is a religious exemption, you can write one yourself. You don't need an attorney. You don't need anyone special. And you submit that to the school. Sometimes they have to submit it to the health departments, depending on the way they handle that sort of things. But many times it's just, if it's private school, many times it's either they accept it or they don't. And if it's a public school, it goes through their Department of Health, and, you know, that is our constitutional right still, freedom of religion.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
My name is Robert, and I'm with Sandy here. And back around 1995, this is kind of interesting, I worked for a company that developed a $750,000 website for NIH, National Institutes of Health. I was one of probably maybe a dozen people working on this website. And the purpose of the website was to develop a website where doctors could put all a patient's medical history on this website and allow the parents to have access to all that medical information, while at the same time providing security that nobody was allowed access that didn't have the authority or right to access that information. And as we proceeded with this website, we would make occasional trips to the NIH campus in Washington, D.C., and just outside of Washington, Maryland. They had a huge campus with which where they did all their studies, and they had all these groups meeting, and I found it very interesting. Well, this we were building this website in Northern Illinois, and we would go in and meet with the local doctors in Northern Illinois. We'd meet doctors in Chicago. We'd go up to Madison, meet top doctors in Madison that were providing medical information. And as you mentioned before, the shots, the vaccinations, were a big part of this website. And with the people that I knew at the time, it was almost common knowledge that the MMR vaccination was the most dangerous vaccine out there. And within NIH and some of the people that I knew, the doctors, at least the ones that were willing to talk about it, said something in the neighborhood of 90% of all SID deaths of children occurred within 2 days of getting the MMR vaccination. And so one of the things that we did is we went to the local schools, the county schools and the local high schools in that area, and we talked to the principals and the heads of the teachers, and I brought up the question, well, do all the kids have to have these dangerous vaccinations? And the county, this was McHenry County in Northern Illinois, ruled that there was virtually no exemption that they would accept that would allow the parents not to get the MMR vaccination. I mean, it was like at gunpoint. You know, they had to have them. And what the county said, that if the kids did not get the MMR, they were not allowed to go to any of the public schools anywhere in Northern Illinois. They were just disallowed, and it was a real hardship on parents because, you know, being working community, a lot of the parents were both parents were working. Nobody was left to watch the kids at home, so homeschooling was very, very difficult, and it created a tremendous hardship on those people. Well, I used to listen to Joyce Riley. Joyce Riley studied the effects of Agent Orange and a lot of the drugs that were given to the military personnel, and she got on this topic a few times. It was very interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with her or not. She had some really fantastic work that she did. And interestingly enough, here a couple of years ago, there was a doctor, Brian Hooker, who was a biologist, received a call from a senior scientist at the U.S. CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, who actually led the CDC's study, 2004 study, on the MMR vaccination and its link to autism. This guy was in charge of the study. And are you familiar with that?
Oh, of course. No. It's amazing to me that it's a few years later, 4 years, I believe, and Congress has still not investigated the claims, and they have all the information. They have all the paperwork that, you know, that shows that vaccine, that the MMR caused a 400% increase in African-American males who had the shot after 3 years of age, before 3 years of age.
You know, and so I thought that was interesting that it is you know, just it is so dangerous, and you tell a lot of people about it, and they get worried about it, and they, like you say, they try to contact somebody that can give them more information, and they say, oh, don't worry about it, you'll be fine. And that's the attitude. And so, yeah, so what can we do to wake people up? I mean, I think you're writing your books is fabulous. I mean, that's wonderful that you're doing that. And what can we do to help? All right, so I'll turn it over to Sandy.
Did you want to answer his question first? Or?
Sure. I think the most important thing that we can do is don't stay silent. I mean, just don't ever think that you're bothering some. If you see someone who has a young child and you feel compelled to mention this information, mention it. Go on social media. I think the parents that talk about the death of their child, whether they're 5 years old or 2 months old, you know, that's so important. Do not stay silent. Keep talking about all of this, because my hope with my book was, I spent 2 years on that book. If I just helped one person, I said to my husband, it would all be worth it. And I know I've helped more than one person because I have people close to me, cousins, and, you know, we share the same gene pool of genetic predispositions. And just helping one person out there with a Facebook post or a Twitter post, you just never know who's seeing it. So don't stay silent.
You know, here's I have one other comment. Are you familiar with the writings of David Icke?
No, I'm not.
David Icke is an author. He's from England, and he's written a lot of books on the subjects of the background of the world, how the governments are run by, you know, maybe shape-shifting reptilian aliens and that sort of thing. But one of the things that David Icke did in his world travels was he traveled to Africa, and he met with a medicine man there that was from a certain tribe. And this guy said that they have legends, you know, down through the thousands of years, the history, and one of the things that this guy did, he being a medicine man he was taught all the oral history from his tribe and everything that was going on in Africa. And he said that back in the days when the missionaries went out into Africa and they went to all the Aboriginal tribes, They under the pretext of trying to civilize them, one of the main focuses of their missionary trips was to vaccinate all these tribes. And he said that the purpose of vaccinating all these people was to destroy their spirituality. As it turns out, all these native Africans that just grew up naturally in Africa, a lot of them had the ability to travel out of body, and they could see auras, and they had a lot of what you call maybe spiritual qualities. And as soon as they got vaccinated, they lost it, completely lost all their spiritual faculties. And this guy said that his family knew about that, and they actually protected him. It was such an insurgent missionary force that it was, he said it was almost impossible to refuse the vaccination. I mean, they almost came and put him at gunpoint and told him, you must take these vaccinations. But his family, you know, was able to protect him. They hid him off in the tule somewhere, and he didn't get vaccinated. But he, David Icke did a video conference with him that you could buy off his website. And it's really, really fascinating. And he talks about the dangers of all these vaccines. So I just thought maybe if you hadn't heard that, that's another thing that a history that very few people know about.
Okay, very interesting. This is, since my background is vocal music and piano, I was wondering if you used any music for your son, your daughter?
Well, music is one of the most calming things for my son. And even though, you know, my son also has a comorbid condition, PANDAS, which a lot of typical children and children with autism have these days. And music is one of the most calming things. When I want my son to be quiet and to be calm, I put music on. So I've done a lot of different types of therapies for him, you know, because I think it's more than just supplements, you know, with these children. And, you know, so whether it's cranial sacral therapy, Reiki, I mean, whatever works for your child is important to investigate further. So, yes, I have investigated a lot of sound therapy. Music therapy is one of the modalities that we have looked into for him.
Right. Do you play any specific composer, or do you just pick and choose from music to like?
I'm always playing different types of music for him, and he lets me know because he'll ask for it. It's usually very kind of slow and emotional music, and it's really older rock, believe it or not, like the Eagles, like the Grateful Dead. I mean, like the oldies but goodies. That's what he chooses. It's very interesting.
Whatever works.
He's
the child.
He's an old soul.
Yeah. It probably came from that era. I am president of the New School Homeschool, which is part of the wonderful Worldwide Educators. And we actually have created a real purpose for people and their children and everyone. And we think we've created something wonderful for this planet Earth, and a lot more comes out of this than just an ordinary career for your child's future. We have a real purpose with everything we do, and our real focus is with the all-natural environment, which supports all of us. And the all-natural environment that consists of more than just nature really does need a lot of tending to from all of us. And we pay attention to everything on planet Earth, because there's a lot more happening, as you probably know, on planet Earth, other than the real food, the real water, and the real air. And it's out there for everybody who wants to partake of it. And I think homeschool is probably the way to go for the future. It just seems to work with the busy parents. We'll schedule a different schedule, learning from home. Seems to be good. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think some of the most important things my children learn are from home. You know, I see what my daughter, what she asks, she's very curious. She asks questions. A lot of times parents are too busy to talk to their children, or they prefer them to be on one of those devices. I'm so happy my daughter is never on a device. She helps my husband juice in the morning. They're always outside, like doing some sort of gardening project. I mean, it's very important that children learn from their parents. It really is. I mean, school is wonderful, but, you know, some of the most important learning is what is the values that you learn, how to handle emotions, all the things, spirituality that you get exposed to.
I believe that. When my children were small, I took away the TV. And when they were very small, like 2 and 4, and I went down to the local paper company and I bought humongous reams of newsprint. And I used to lay them down on the kitchen floor and give them crayons and let them go and draw. And to this day, one turned out to be into the engineering sector, and my daughter still likes to draw cartoons. So it stays with them.
Definitely.
They didn't have the distraction, I want to say, of the TV, where parents had just sat them down to watch cartoons, or now it's games, I guess, more than anything. And then I gave them music. I remember one time, I like to play classical music sometimes, and this is when the children were very small, and they were outside playing with their friends. It was all fenced, so it was okay, but I went downstairs to play the piano, and I turned around, and all the neighborhood kids were sitting on the steps that were leading to upstairs watching me play the piano, and it was classical. So, I you know, it was just kind of floored me. It's like, you're listening to this? You know, where I would have thought they would have listened to something more upbeat into their genre. But they like it. They love it.
It's
so
stimulating
more
for their brain.
It is. And it balances both sides of their brain, too. Not just the one side, but the both sides. It crosses that corpus luteum in there.
And I think it's another thing that's so important is it's important for children to be bored sometimes and not be overstimulated, because that's when my daughter does some of her most, she'll say to me, Mom, I'm bored. And I'll say, well, why don't you go outside and do something? Or why don't you have paper here? Why don't you do a project? And she makes, you know, some kind of costume out of paper. I mean, she just starts inventing things and comes to show them to me an hour later all proud. And that's something our children are missing out on. And even worse is they're feeling pressure that they need to look like they're having fun all the time and they're posing for pictures. I mean, when I was growing up, we just had to figure out something to do, maybe make chocolate chip cookies from scratch. We weren't sitting around posing for pictures to put on Instagram to make it look like we're really happy and doing something cool.
Right. Right. I understand. You know, my kids always hated school, and we had moved to Hawaii. But in the Hawaii school system, you can go to school barefoot. You don't really have to comb your hair, although it looks better. But they have all sorts of classes like hula dancing and other Hawaiian things going on, and some of the language and the music. And then my kids started liking school again. It just is. It's in the States here, or in the mainland here, it is so structured. And you have to do certain things a certain way, that creativity is so cut off.
I mean, they don't even give them enough time to eat lunch anymore. I think my daughter gets like 15, 20 minutes, and her lunch comes home. She always tells me, I didn't have enough time, Mom.
Yeah, and who can down a lunch in 15 minutes easily? You can't. I can't.
No, and I think that even includes the time it takes to walk to the cafeteria and back to the classroom. It's just, and recess. I'm very thankful that my daughter's school finds recess so important. She even sometimes has it twice a day, because we're putting these kids on medications, and some of the time, I'm not saying all of the time, some of the time they just need recess. They need to move.
They need to, right. They need to, just like a new puppy needs to go outside and get rid of some of that energy. It's better. It's so much better for them. The body works better for them. Before I do a musical or a vocal music lesson, and sometimes with the piano too, I have the child either step in place or run in place so that blood gets moving to the lungs and up to the brain before I start them out. It makes a difference. I mean, you wouldn't run the 50-yard dash without warming up, you know.
No, and I know that I have had jobs in the past where you're at a desk all day manning that desk, and I've never felt worse during the short periods of times I had jobs like that. The jobs where you're moving around and doing things and talking to people and, you know, those are the ones that we tend to do well at and are better for our health, our mental health and physical.
Right. It's just never good for us to sit 8 hours a day in one spot. Let alone the electromagnetic waves that are coming off the computer at us.
And it's not good for our children. And unfortunately, a lot of schools are trying to get our children to sit 8-9 hours a day like they're at a job.
You know, when I do a piano lesson, especially with the little ones, let's say I have a 3- or 4-year-old, no more than 15 minutes because that's all they can sit. That's it. So trying to get a child to sit for an extended length of time is really silly. Doesn't make sense.
I have a comment about what you were talking about in the schools. There is a microwave engineer. If you go on YouTube and look up the dangers of microwaves on YouTube, this guy, he says that any school that puts in a wireless network so that the students can have wireless access to the network, the computer network, should be put in prison, in a dungeon, put in solitary confinement, and throw away the key until the guy dies of old age. And, you know, because it is so dangerous being around the Wi-Fis they put in schools, like high schools and grade schools. So if you get a chance, go on YouTube and look up the dangers of radiation and microwaves. So it's very interesting.
I really have one more question here, and I partly because one of my friends owns a lot of horses, and she was considering opening up a riding school for children with autism or children that have developmental disabilities. Have you ever done that with your children?
Well, my son went to a camp where they had a horse, and it was amazing how calming, and I realized very quickly, you know, like some children do, you know, swim with the dolphins, some children have therapy dogs, there's all kinds of, you know, animals that are incredible for our children, and my son's school that he attends right now is on a biodynamic farm, and he does a lot of hiking outside, and they have cows and they have horses, and yeah, he does amazing around these animals. The stress level is dissipated, you know, when he's outside hiking and in touch with all these animals.
Well, I believe it. I'm a real animal lover to begin with, and I've been on horses since I've been 2. And it is amazing once you're on that animal. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I think that's something, that type of therapy, whatever type of animal it is, and horses, of course, are very popular, the children do very well. And I think it's wonderful that, you know, that's increasing. And my son's school actually has an after-school program. We're trying to fit that into his schedule of horse therapy, the equine therapy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yes.
I have another caller here, caller 617. If you want to introduce yourself and ask a question to Ms. Dar here.
Yes, my name is John Penuel. How are you today, Dar?
I'm good, thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for being courageous and brave and standing against the regime that's out to, you know, take away our happiness. Unfortunately, I have a daughter. She's 15 years old now. She has systematic asthma, and she takes albuterol and steroids and some other things. It's all a direct result of vaccinations. And I can trace it back to when she was 3 years old. She actually had she had to catch up on her vaccination shots. And her mother and I, we weren't familiar with any of this stuff. And she was a normal, happy, healthy three-year-old who played and laughed and danced and everything else. She ran around. She never had any problems with breathing or no type of allergies or reactions to the air or the environment whatsoever. And we went and we took her to the local health department down in the state of Florida because we had transitioned down there. And they gave her, I think it was two or three multi-dose shots. And if you're not familiar with that is, anyone that's listening, it's when more than one vaccination is contained in the vial. And in the process of doing that, what they do is they actually add certain chemicals and certain metals to keep it so that it's preserved. It's thimerosal, dimerosal. They're all like derivatives of aluminum. But the bottom line is that she got deathly sick for the next, I guess it was 72 hours. And she was running a high fever, and we were putting her, you know, in the tub with the ice and everything else. I mean, we took her to the hospital, all these things. And what had happened is within a week, we had went over a friend's house, and she had played with animals before without any issues or problems. But we went over a friend's house who had a cat that just had kittens. And she came back in from the room where she was playing with the kittens, and she was broken out. And she couldn't breathe. We had to take her to the hospital. And what it all resulted from that is a regimen of steroids, antibiotics, and inhalers, nebulizers. You know, you name it, she does it. And she's been doing it most of her life now. She was hospitalized on a yearly basis since the age of about 8, usually around the winter months. Where she's more indoors, and I guess her immune system has been compromised to that level. Now, I did a lot of research and homework on this because of that, because it just like, you know, I like to consider myself intelligent and informed, so I did some homework. And this is what I came up with. I read a book by, you know, like this guy's done a lot of homework and a lot of research and everything else. He seemed like a very proactive advocate for anti-vaccinations and mercury and aluminum and everything else. And what it came down to was in females, because their body produces estrogen, the mercury seems to go to major organs throughout the body. In boys, which causes things like asthma and things along those lines, you know, different types of heart problems, and, you know, gastrointestinal problems, et cetera, et cetera. But with boys, because they produce testosterone, the mercury seems to go to the neurological areas, specifically the brain. And this is why there's, you know, autism is, you know, a number one factor with boys. You know, and like after doing all this homework and all, like I kind of thought like after – all that, like, you know, I felt the guilt, the shame, the responsibility, you know, I should have been more informed. I should have been more educated, all these things. And I really commend that you came out and that you're working to educate as many people as possible about your own personal experience. I mean, that is awesome. The question that I have, I mean, that's just my experience. And I find it very interesting that Merck, the company that produces the vaccinations, is the same company that produces the medicines that my daughter has to take for the rest of her life now. Very interesting. You know, I don't really believe in coincidences too much, especially when there's agendas and financial means and control factors, you know, behind it all. But my question is this. Since this Kennedy doctor was appointed to the Trump, you know, vaccination board or whatever the heck it is, I really try not to stay too involved with politics. I mean, do you think that there's been any kind of significant change recently? Or do you think it's just same dance, different song? I mean, I don't know what better way to put that, Dara.
Well, Well, Robert Kennedy wasn't official that he got appointed. What happened is when he put together this vaccine safety commission that Trump wanted to do, he got a lot of backlash, of course, from the pharmaceutical companies. And Robert Kennedy Jr. has not heard from the Trump administration since that was announced. Nothing has gone further. Nothing has been done on the vaccine front. You know, people had high hopes with Trump because he had come out. He's the only president who's come out and said, like, they're dangerous, they cause autism. So people had high hopes that maybe he would do something. And unfortunately, he's done a couple. They're like teeny tiny in the whole picture. One thing he set up was this part of HHS with Health and Human Services where people could complain if their religious exemption was being threatened or their religious rights. It wasn't specific to exemptions. And then he set up something else where he was making Congress take steps to ensure that families, adults who were raising a child, taking care of another adult with a disability, would get all kinds of supports. But that's so little compared to what really needs to be done. So unfortunately, everybody had high hopes, even people who don't like Trump at all, had high hopes that Kennedy was going to be able to do something. But he is doing something because he did sue Health and Human Services for the fact that part of that liability in 1986 that Reagan signed that shielded the pharmaceutical companies from liability, they were supposed to do, Health and Human Services of the government was supposed to do a study every 2 years showing vaccine safety. And what came out of this lawsuit of Robert Kennedy was in 32 years, they have never did one study that they were supposed to do. So they have violated this this law that was signed. And so things, he's still moving forward besides with all the things he's doing with Monsanto. He's moving forward with vaccines because, you know, he's so bothered by how many parents he sees, like what happened to your daughter, what happened to my son. So I have high hopes that he's going to keep going with his work.
Thank you so much, Dara, for answering that question. I only have one other thing that I wanted to ask, because you are so informed, and I appreciate that, and I love the knowledge that you're giving off to us. When you're dealing with doctors in general today, with your children, you know, like, all right, so if I try to inform a doctor and, or do it for a friend, and I've been doing that, what I've been hearing, people that work in the healthcare industry, they go onto these servers at the hospitals or clinics and they try to get the information and websites are blocked. So, you know, there's like this whole disinformation, lack of ability to attain information going on within that industry because they don't want people to know how to protect themselves and their families and their children. And doctors that want to become informed don't even have access to any information through those systems. And it's sad and it's scary. But my question is this, that's my own personal experience. My question is this, though, as far as when you're talking to or dealing with doctors, and I'm sure you're seeking out more holistic approaches, is there any kind of suggestions or advice that you give to the listeners as far as how they should approach, you know, informed or uninformed or misinformed doctors who, you know, like they're concerned about people signing waivers and everything else. It just seems like they're protecting themselves and their insurance. If there's any advice or, you know, that you could give to us.
Sure. Well, I think one of the best things I ever did is I stay clear of pediatricians. I don't go to a regular pediatric office. We have a family practitioner, and family practitioners are very different. First of all, you're not going to wait in their office for 3 hours with all the other sick kids that they have to fit in. But what's great about them is their bread and butter is not vaccines. They're not quick to put your child on a symptom-suppressing drug. So I find them much more open, a family practitioner, and certainly if you can find like a doctor of osteopath or someone who's more holistically minded, but many times you have to go to a Western medicine doctor, if it's a specialist. And I think if you're up against opposition and someone is suggesting things that you're not comfortable with, I mean, you know, go back to your insurance plan, take the time, go see another doctor, because you don't want to get caught up in a situation. You know, unfortunately, you know, we have issues with medical kidnapping, and it's a real threat what's going on when you don't agree with what a doctor says. So I just think that, you know, if someone makes you uncomfortable, don't see them again. That's the most important. And like I said, my advice is to stay clear of a regular pediatric office at all possible.
I want to thank you so much, Dara. Nobody's going to have the vested interest in ourselves and our families and our children as the parents and the family members themselves. No doctor, no attorney, no government or law enforcement official. No one has the vested interest in our families and children. And I appreciate you taking your time to share with us your experience.
Of course.
Yes, thank you. Questions. Are there any other listeners that would like to ask a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to say something quick before I ask my question, just that, you know, it only takes a quick look at, you know, what makes sense to figure out that, you know, the vaccines, the indoctrinating schools, and, you know, all these systems don't make sense compared to the natural environment. Support us, you know, like it was mentioned with kids, you know, hanging out with animals and, you know, spending time in nature that they can't sit down like the indigenous peoples would have just always spent time in nature and they didn't have school to sit down and get bored or indoctrinated with. So it's cool what's being shared here. It's been a lot of fun listening. And one question is a bit off the topic of vaccines, but you mentioned how you know, it's good to eat organic food and things, and that makes sense to me. But you also mentioned the chemtrails. So do you think, or do you see that the chemtrails, the organic food as well, and, you know, how that plays a part in buying organic food?
I am concerned about that because, quite frankly, you know, a lot of people grow gardens, even if they don't get their entire food supply, but they're eating what they're growing, and the chemtrails are coming down onto people's lawns and certainly on organic farms. So I do think it is a pretty big threat. I think the chemtrails are becoming more regular and more often, the ones that I see over New York City, certainly. Any bright blue sky day, I say to myself in the morning, oh, I should be seeing chemtrails soon, and sure enough, they're there. So unfortunately, I do think it is a growing problem, and I would expect that it's possible people might start putting a shield over their farms, or, you know, certainly over people's gardens would be easy enough to do, or growing things hydroponic inside. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and how people remedy the situation.
Cool. Thanks again. It's been a great show.
Thank you.
Do we have Mr. Val from our Nations United Universal University? Did you want to come on and share something, a 650 area code?
Sure. Thank you, Kelsey. This is Val. Hi, Dara. I really appreciate what you're doing, the information that you're providing, and your courage as well. I'm just looking at all this, sitting back and listening, and it's just surprising that we're even having this conversation, that how convoluted things have gotten over the years, where nature was let to have its course, you know, through the Indians and the indigenous people. And then every time we seem to add anything to nature, we try to add something to nature, it just goes haywire. And here's a perfect example of vaccines and how it's just, it's gotten out of hand. It's like the Frankenstein idea. And apparently, I know a lot of the listeners today are aware of what's going on, because I hear chemtrails mentioned and such, and the GMO food. So there's something going on here. And I'm just looking at also at history here, way back at the in 1700s when the Europeans came to this country and they brought smallpox, and the Indians were not immune to it. So they would, you know, a lot of them got destroyed from smallpox. And when Lewis and Clark went out to on their mission in 1804, President Jefferson actually had set with them a vaccine for the smallpox for the Indians. So it went bad, so they didn't get any chance to use it. But here we kind of, they're probably, the controllers, elites are looking at this and say, hey, this is a good way to destroy people, get rid of people, is through disease. And, you know, it looks natural enough that it's just a way to get rid of people or to make them sick so that, you know, the pharmaceutical company can come in and make their money and such. So it's just gotten way out of hand from the natural way it could be. And that's part of what we're doing with the Nations United University, is just we're going back to what makes sense in the world and doing something, you know, like you, just doing something to make or help people become more aware, first with the knowledge, and then there's always more. But it doesn't have to be more in terms of like adding on to nature. It can be working with nature and doing something in that respect. So I do appreciate your time here today. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Val. I see we have 541 area code. Is that Tim from Oregon? Are you there? Did you have something to share or a question? Are you muted, caller 541-450-3691? Did you have something to share? Okay, well, he might be trying to figure out the mute button. I have a question, and that would be, I see the new moms and young moms, and they're going to the hospitals, and they're having a hard time when they're refusing the vaccines. They're getting bullied and threatened. And through your experience, everything you've learned and your knowledge, Ms. Darrow, do you suggest home birthing, finding doulas, midwives? Do you get into anything in that area that you could express to young people or young moms out there today?
Sure. So I originally was going to do a home birth with my second daughter. I was going to use a midwife, and then my husband was very, very nervous. So we decided to go ahead and do a hospital birth in a New York City hospital. I did hire a doula. I had decided that I was going to do a natural childbirth because my first birth had all the bells and whistles, and obviously I didn't have a good outcome there. So I went in with notarized documents that I did not want the Hep B vaccination. I went in that I did not want to have the vitamin K shot. I had bought an oral vitamin K by a compounding pharmacy named Silsby, brought it with me to the hospital. All my ducks were in order. I had the pediatrician write the note saying he did not think my daughter should get a vitamin K shot and should get the oral vitamin. Well, we got to the hospital. That vitamin K thing was a big problem. They fought with me. My natural childbirth stopped at one point for an hour because of the stress. And finally, I said to my husband, get that woman out of here, the head pediatrician. I said, you deal with it. You just make sure that we're not getting a vitamin K shot. And my husband went out there, he fought with her. I had to fight really hard to, you know, they want to do all these interventions. At one point, the fetal heartbeat went down with my daughter, and I had read a wonderful book called Gentle Birth Choices? I talk about it in my book, and the advice from the nurse in the book was, if the fetal heartbeat goes down, just change positions. And sure enough, I looked at the doctor. She was heading me off for a C-section, or was trying to. And I said, let me just stand up for a minute. And I stood up, and sure enough, the heartbeat went back to normal. So it's like little things like that. You need to get the knowledge so you can empower yourself. And I took a hypnobirthing class for the breathing. And I'm just going to say, it wasn't easy. I had to fight them on like every little thing. But I did have a natural childbirth. My daughter did not get a vitamin K shot, did not get the Hep B vaccination, and I never let her out of my sight. When the birth was done, they wanted to take her to the nursery, And I looked at all of them and I said, she's not going without me. And they said, we have to take her. You still need to be, you know, taken care of. And I said, if you're going to take her, I'm going to leave now. She's not going out of my sight. And like literally you could hear a pin drop. Everybody was silent. They knew I was serious. Even my husband was begging to let her go to the nursery. And I said, absolutely not. I said, if she's going, I'm leaving. I'm taking her and going home. And they knew I was dead serious. And so she never left my sight for the 48 hours in the New York City hospital. But I have to tell you, I believe she's 8 years old, eight and a half, that if I was doing the same thing again today, I don't think it would be possible. I think things have gotten even harder, even tougher. I hear parents being threatened that they'll call CPS if they don't do the vitamin K or the Hep B shot. So if it were today and I was having a baby right now, I would definitely at all costs avoid a hospital. That would be my personal choice.
Thank you for sharing. I did read of the book Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering, A Doctor's Guide to Natural Childbirth by Sarah J. Buckley, MD. The book you're talking about might be Gentle Birth Choices by Suzanne Arm. She's an RN.
And Barbara Harper, the RN. Yes, that is the book. And I have to tell you, it was one of the best books out of all the pregnancy books I read.
Wonderful.
It was amazing. Yeah, and I do want to say one thing. I encourage every woman to try to have a natural childbirth. I know we're led to be scared about it, and it's one thing I talk to my daughter right now. I instill in her how it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And I think it's so important to bring a child into the world not encumbered with all kinds of chemicals and things and medications, because I think people don't realize, you know, the Pitocin and the epidural, even though they haven't been directly linked to anything, there is a lot of talk in the scientific community that there is a curiosity of whether or not this synthetic Pitocin is also behind, you know, being something that contributes to the autism epidemic. And epidurals are not without, I had one with my first son, but they are not without complications for both mother and baby. I recently wrote an article all about that. So I just wanted to mention that.
That's great. Do you have a website where you're writing articles or blogs that people can check this out at?
You know, I write articles for my own blog, and I write it for other places. The article I'm talking about was on GreenMed. They shared that article, greenmedinfo.com. It was about childbirth choices. I believe if you just put in C-section childbirth choices, you'll find the article. And it was well-researched. There was a lot of studies from PubMed that were cited. Because I, you know, a lot of times when you give this kind of information that's contrary to, like, you know, what's in the mainstream, you really get a lot of backlash. So it was very important that I included a lot of studies to show this is not just me and my crazy thinking. This is actual scientific information, and there have been studies on it. Focus for Health was the website and organization that asked me to write the article. So it's easy to find it on their website. And they have many wonderful articles on children's health.
Thank you, Ms.
Hear me?
Oh, yes, there you are. Yes, I was just going to ask if you had a question or something to share. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if you have any ideas how to present it to the masses. It seems like tension, unless something's affecting them, besides these like radio shows that a certain amount of people are hearing, any ideas for being able to present it to the masses of the planet?
I think that what a lot of people are doing is what is working, writing books, doing documentary films, writing articles, posting on social media, going to their local politicians and to their state politicians and trying to make a difference. I think that, and talking to everybody around you. Even if you think that they're not interested and they're not really listening, just keep talking to your family members, to your friends. And if all of us keep doing it, you're reaching a lot of people. There's a ripple effect.
Yeah, thanks for that idea.
Of course.
I'll give it back over to our host, Mary.
Yeah, no more questions. Does anyone have any more questions for Ms. Sarah? All right, I think that's it, Ms. Sarah. Is there anything that you would like to add? For the listeners, anything you find imperative for mothers, for children?
I think the only thing that I would leave people with is just know that the choices you make matter. You can make choices each day that protect and keep your child healthy, or you can make choices and say, oh, this one little thing is not going to make a difference that I do that's not so great. But those one little things keep adding up over time and can erode your child's health. So just, you know, try to make good choices every day. Try your best. You know, we're all busy. It's all tough out there, raising children, having a family. But just do the best you can. And for the people who are extremely knowledgeable, don't stop talking. Even on days where you don't feel like you're making a difference, just know just affecting one person can have that ripple effect that we talked about before. So just keep talking.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so happy to share you with everyone. You are very much aware of what's going on here. Everyone out there who's listening, grab a book, check out the documentary, check out Say It Out Loud, incorporate it. I just wanted to add that most people here think that this physical and creation is everything. I was listening to you talk about music and how soothing it is for children, and I wanted to share with you and your children the new song for yourself, for all the children, for all the new moms and parents out there. And I would be super interested if maybe in the future, if you would like to write an email on or share with me any difference you see with your children with sharing the new song with them or your own awareness. It would be a pleasure to hear from you, maybe even have you on again if you find that it was super helpful. Here at the new homeschool, it's what we're starting out with the new song. It goes a little bit something like this. It would be new you. That's what I sing to my children before they go to bed. It's something that I sing throughout the day. You can YouTube Eva. She sings it with the birds. It's about 20 minutes long, and you could just play it for your son or for your daughter. And we are here for the children, and children are the future. And they know what they need. We just have to listen. Thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Coming on.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank
you, everyone. I'll wrap up the last part of the show here. We are a nonprofit, worldwide nonprofit, based in Huntington Beach, California, for the all-natural environment and the children. Our biggest projects are the All-Solar Research Vessel projects for the students and the children of this world. That includes the New School Homeschool, the Nations United Universal University, which will be floating universities on the All-Solar Research Vessels, as each individual steps up and participates and agrees to make sense with what is taking place here. If you would like to make a contribution or a donation, please use PayPal, and you can use the new presentation, that's NU presentation. My name is Kelsey Lynn Brown, Lynn with an E. If you have any more questions, please feel free to contact me on Facebook, or my cell phone number is 757-284-9689. It's area code 757-284-9689. We have affiliates all over the internet. You can check us out on healthawareness.strikingly.com. And be sure to pay attention to what we're doing in our next episode. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and have a good night. Bye-bye.